Hello, my name is Ben Jenkins, and welcome back to another episode of the New Guide Radio Podcast. This will be a short two-part series. In today's episode, we'll be talking about the fundamentals of blood gas interpretation. It will include what is a blood gas itself, what are some of the things that the blood gas tells us, and the differences between arterial and venous samples. While in the next episode, we're going to be analyzing blood gases, more specifically looking at pHs, your PCO2 and your bicarb, in order to manipulate ventilatory settings to match our patient's needs. So let's get underway. To start with, what is a blood gas? A blood gas is a particular type of blood test that we can run. To start with, we're going to be collecting a sample. We collect blood samples within a blood gas syringe. So in other words, you need a particular piece of equipment in order to do this. Now, you can either collect arterial or venous samples. An arterial sample is going to come by way of having a doctor come in, getting one of these syringes. You put a little sharp on the end of it, which comes in the packet, and the doctor can palpate the artery and perform an arterial stab and collect the arterial blood sample that way. Or most commonly, as you'll see, and saving the doctor having to keep coming in time after time after time and doing that, the patient most likely would already have an arterial line. As we discussed in one of the other episodes this season, one of the primary functions of an arterial line is you can easily collect arterial samples. Or it could also be a venous sample. So it could be a venous blood gas. The way that we collect that is, again, with the same syringe, so it's the same blood gas syringe. You can go to a peripheral cannula and you can bleed from that peripheral cannula into the syringe itself, or you could be performing a venipuncture and collecting the blood that way. However, whether you've collected a venous and arterial sample, you'll take that blood gas syringe over to the blood gas analyzer or the blood gas machine. So you'll take it over and there's a particular sequence in which you'll be putting it in. However, primarily you're just going to waste a little bit of it and then you screw it into the machine. You'll then put in the details of saying you're using the PIN code to say that you're the one performing this test today. You'll state on it whether it's an arterial or a venous sample. That's really important to do. We'll talk about that in a sec. And then you're also going to scan to say that the particular barcode of the patient, or enter the patient's details in to say that once it's finished analyzing, it's going to upload to that particular patient's records. So once you've pushed go, the machine starts its magic. So as you can imagine, there's the striking differences between a blood gas and your formal bloods. So your formal bloods, you are collecting it just like normal. You've decanted the blood into your blood, the syringes itself, like the ampules. From there, you're then going to either be lanceted down, or however those blood tubes are ending up down at pathology. But these bloods are then going to be analyzed formally within a lab, and it takes time in order for that to happen. And then those blood results are then going to come back and you'll get your answers. As opposed to blood gases, where it's something that you could do as a registered nurse. You pull the sample, go over to the machine, and it analyzes it within a matter of minutes. And so there you could say, wow, it's amazing. The blood gases are only going to tell you a particular type of information, and that's what we'll go over today. I really want to highlight what a blood gas is able to tell you, as opposed to the formal bloods, where there is such variety and there's so much that can happen. And each of these, a blood gas and formals, have their place. So how long does it take for a blood gas? Now that you've got it in there and it's starting to do its interpretation, how long does it take? Well, it can, it depends how temperamental the machine wants to be honest. It's sometimes it could be 3 o'clock in the morning and the machines start to take their time. But when it's all working smoothly and it's all good, it can take about a minute in order to put it in, put it all out, and takes a minute for the machine to work its magic, and then it will print out a particular report for you. And at the same time, we'll upload those same results to the patient's details. So let's have a quick talk about what sort of results can come up on a blood gas. Now, as I sort of mentioned before, there's going to be differences between arterial and venous samples. Now, it's important to talk, and it's important to really make sure that you're collecting the right button. So if you've collected an arterial sample, it's an arterial sample. Because even though most of the results are going to come out and there are going to be very slight differences between arterial and venous results, so when you're talking about something like hemoglobin or potassium, whether it's venous or arterial, should be very, very similar. But where it's going to be different is going to come in terms of how we interpret it, with the main one that's going to strike out is going to be oxygen. Now, as we know, the arterial blood is very rich in oxygen. It's oxygenated blood, as opposed to venous blood, which obviously is not. So if we were to pick up a blood gas and we have a look and see if someone's CO2 is going to be outside of normal, like falsely low, on a healthy person, that can be normal. And that's okay if we know that. However, for patients in the intensive care unit have quite bad lung pathology. So I've got someone on a ventilator, we've got someone's FiO2 pushing up near the 100% mark. And because their lungs are so unwell and they're so critically unwell, we can have patients who are on all of that oxygen with an arterial sample and still have an oxygen that is very low and lower than normal. And that's why it's important to clearly outline whether this is an arterial or a venous sample. So again, once it spits out the report, it's going to say right at the top, is this arterial or is this a venous? It's also going to have the date and the time on that slip as well. I just want to say that similarly to a vital sign survey, so you're taking blood pressures, you're doing your normal stuff, you're looking at trends. Well, it's going to be the exact same way with a blood gas. And I'm going to refer to everything now as blood gases. We understand that there's arterial and there's venous. Often not, we could be taking 15-minute blood gases, especially if we're looking at changing ventilatory settings or whether we're looking at things like if someone's bleeding or not and looking at hemoglobin. So again, we're also going to notice on the blood gas that we've entered in the patient's details, and we'll say which patient that this is as well, making sure that we're analyzing the right one. Now, I just want to talk about big concepts in today. I just want to keep this episode nice and short to talk about what are some of the things that blood gases can provide us. So to start with, you're going to have acid base. And I'll talk about this more in depth in the next episode, but it's going to be breaking down pH, PCO2, PO2, bicarbonate base excess. Now, you can have a lot of information from that. And also something that I didn't really mention then, but also something that you're also putting into the machine as you're doing it is what FiO2 is that patient on? So you don't have to be ventilated in order to be able to get a lot of information from this. You can have patients with COPD. And if you know that, and then you could pretty much know that their CO2, being they're often CO2 retainers, that their CO2 may already be that little bit higher than normal, and that could be normal for that patient. But again, have an understanding of how much oxygen concentration are we delivering to the patient. And then it has, in our mind, we should know that their oxygen hopefully should be a little bit higher than normal. Yes or no? Is the oxygen we're providing the patient actually doing anything or not? Is it making a big difference? But again, I'll talk about that more on the next episode. Next, we also come down and look at hemoglobin. So it depends, again, why are we taking this blood gas? Again, we could be looking for signs of bleeding. So whether or not, and again, we're looking at if this is trending down over a matter of time, is there an active bleed? Next, we could be coming down and having a look at sodium and potassium. Sodium's a big, big one when it comes to looking if someone's hyper or hyponatremic. So again, that could be what could have flagged you to have pulled this in the first place, because it'd be altered conscious state. And also because we provide a lot of fluid to patients within the intensive care unit as well, and that can have an effect on sodium. And looking at things like if someone's got a traumatic brain injury, we try to keep sodiums within a particular level. That's getting a bit too in-depth. Next one, looking at potassium. Most of the patients, if not all the patients within the intensive care unit, are going to be on constant telemetry. And because that's the case, you're probably going to start picking up a whole bunch of weird, wonky electrical activity every now and again. You start to see PVCs, PACs. Patients may go into runs of bigeminy, trigeminy, things that you normally just don't see day to day because we're not all hooked up to telemetry. But again, something if you're noticing that someone's consistently going into weird monkey rhythms, something that we do quite often is to pull a blood gas and have a look at their K. We may have to optimize their electrolytes. And when we say that, often we're optimizing their potassium and magnesium. Now, magnesium is not found on blood gases. Instead, it's in their formals. And this is just a little side note that potassium and magnesium play hand in hand. As I found out as a grad quite early on, there was a few patients, one to start with, where I was chucking all this potassium at someone, and their potassium levels just weren't rising. And it's because their magnesium was low. So if you optimize their mag, And then you chuck K on top of it, which is something that you'll see people do in ICU quite a bit. Then that's when you'll start to see that potassium start to rise. But again, you can start getting potassiums on this as well. And two further ones that we often look at is going to be glucose. So you don't have to keep pricking patients every now and again with their glucometer. This is something that come up. And you'll see something quite often, and a lot of intensive care patients are on ACT Rapid and continuous infusions of insulin due to their critically unwell state, as well as lactate. Now, lactate itself, there's a lot that could be said about lactate, but keeping it nice and simple, if you're starting noticing a lactate rising, so usually when it crosses the level of 2, once it goes past 2, then it's going to, and that's 2 millimoles per litre, and it starts to rise, that's usually a flag to say this patient is getting worse. So even as I've just mentioned all of this, you'll notice that I didn't have any parameters of what was normal versus abnormal. At the very bottom of the blood gases themselves, usually there's a range that comes up there and says what is normal within normal patient ranges, and also next to the levels as well. If it's higher than normal or if it's lower than normal, there could be a little arrow next to it. And I'm only speaking about the blood gas machines that I've particularly used in my time. That may not be the case for everyone. So if you know that you're about to come in and use blood gas machines quite often, then it's a lot of it is just about rote learning what is normal versus abnormal. But I hope you've got a decent understanding of the types of things that you can get from blood gases. Again, there's quite a bit more information than what I've just mentioned there, but these are some of your most common things that you'll get from a formal or from a blood gas itself. And whether it's a venous or an arterial sample, all of this data is going to be listed the exact same way. So now that you have your blood gas interpretation, you've got your little slip that it's printed out at you and it's been uploaded. If you're concerned whatsoever about if something is out of normal, the next step would then be to obviously flag that. And as I noticed pretty early on, how you flag that to the doctor is really important. So as you approach the doctor, you'll come up and say, "Hi, my name is, I'm currently in bed space such and such. I'm looking after patient such and such who came in with. I have noted," and then give a rationale for why you've taken the blood gas. Is it because I was worried that there's signs of bleeding? I'm noticing that their heart rate's increasing. I'm noticing that their blood pressure is decreasing. Their tummy is becoming more firm, or I'm noticing that their oxygen saturations are coming down. It's coming down despite me turning up their oxygen concentration and positional, and I've tried suctioning, I've tried all this sort of stuff, and it's just not improving. So therefore, I have performed this blood gas, and I note that these things are abnormal, and that's why I've approached you. If you really lay out the information to you in a way that provides them some details right there about why you've done it and for what patient, I think the doctors are going to be exceptionally receptive to that. So anyway, guys, I hope you found this episode pretty useful. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to let me know, and I'll get to you very shortly with another episode breaking down blood gas interpretation when it comes to looking at manipulating ventilatory settings. So stay tuned.